What took you so long? I've been sitting here waiting for you. All day. Now you just choose to click and I'm supposed to magically appear? Well, I don't think so.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
All right, whatever.
Whatever.
That's what I said. Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you. Welcome to the program. Please sit back and relax. Sit down. Stop pacing. You're making me nervous. Just take it easy. I'll take care of things for about a half an hour here. You just relax. Get some sleep while I do this. you just go get some sleep. Welcome to the program. How are you? I am Ron Van Dam. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. And thank you so much for being here. Not that I need you necessarily. There are other people that listen. It's not just you. So whatever. I've talked about this recently. The leaves are changing colors. And if you live in the north, anywhere in this country, you've seen it before, you'll see it again. We go so crazy when a leaf changes color, we go nuts. Look, stop the car, look, that tree, it's a bright red with some yellow in it. Stop the car, I need to take a picture of it. You see, yeah, but this happens every year. It's not like a comet. Where, like, once every 2,000 years, the comet passes over the planet. It's not like that. It's every single fall, these leaves change color. You know, it's the leaves change. Here's a little science thing for you. The leaves are changing color because they are losing their chlorophyll. It's the chlorophyll that keeps the leaves green. Now, if that wasn't worth the price you pay to hear this show, then I don't know what is. I'm serious. I'll tell you a funny story.
Okay, get comfortable, everybody. It's time for one of Ron's funny stories.
All right, that's enough. Let's not overdo it. Let's not overdo something, shall we not? Funny story isn't really all that funny. It is the time of year, autumn. It's autumnal. And as much as we get all excited about leaves changing colors and then dying and falling off the tree, we also get very excited about pumpkins. Ooh, pumpkins. They're special. They're little orange gourds. And I'm not talking about the President of the United States. I'm talking about pumpkins. There is a big similarity between the two. Yeah, there is a big similarity between a pumpkin head and the President of the United States. Both of them are stuffed with squishy vegetable matter. Both of them. They both are very orange in color. Both of them. You could literally have a dream about smashing both of them to smithereens. Both of them. They both possess the same amount of intelligence. Both of them. And they both make as much sense as a cucumber. Both of them. Both of them have silly little grins. Both of them are ineffective as far as protein sources. And I can't stand both of them. So there you have your analogy.
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
Out of the mouths of babes comes the truth. One of my favorite guests is Dr. Donica Moore. She's going to join us just a little bit later in the program. And I like her because she's so down to earth. She is down to earth. We're going to talk about IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. It's one of my favorite subjects. I can go off for half an hour talking about irritable bowels. When I was doing stand-up comedy, I did literally a half an hour on irritable bowel syndrome. It was hilarious. Today's topic is even more interesting. Not only is it irritable bowel syndrome, but it's irritable bowel syndrome D, which means it results in diarrhea. What could be more fitting for my program than an in-depth discussion on conditions that result in diarrhea? Thank you very much. That's why you listen to this show. I know it is. There's no other reason. When I was doing broadcast radio not long ago, I was on a station that was heard from Boston to Providence. And we had a pretty good following there. And it was a talk show, as I've always done, because I can't sing. I guarantee you I cannot sing. If I demonstrated to you the fact that I cannot sing, you would probably say, "You didn't have to do that, Ron. We believe you." So we would talk about, we'd have guests on the show like I do on this one all the time, like thousands of guests. The one show that put the ratings through the roof, and I am talking about through the roof, there were articles written about this particular show that I did. I was told by my doctore, that I needed to get a colonoscopy. I had never had a colonoscopy before. And I didn't know what it was. And it sounded horrific. So I went on the air and I said, "I'm being honest with you, listeners of the program. I'm scheduled to have a colonoscopy in a few weeks. I don't know what it is. I hear horror stories about it. Please call in and tell me your story about your first colonoscopy." We had two producers on the show that would answer phone calls and do all that stuff. The phones were ringing off the hook, and I mean off the hook. They literally jumped off the hook. They were, and in those days, they were phones that were on hooks. They couldn't answer the phone calls fast enough. We couldn't get enough of them on the air. They just, everybody wanted to tell their colonoscopy story. It was an education for me. I think it was a kumbaya moment for people that get tubes shoved up their ass in a medical sense. And I throw in a medical sense because I have a feeling there are a lot of tubes going up asses that are not medically prescribed. We had the largest rating ever. And it wasn't because there was a celebrity on the show or we weren't talking about any great political topic or social media thing. We were talking about colonoscopies. Incredibly popular. I swear there are people calling from Japan.
Oh, colonoscopy, I'll tell you about my first colonoscopy.
That's my impression of a Japanese accent. It sucked. I do two accents, American, which is what I'm doing now, and I do a Jewish accent, and I do that rather well.
Hey, what are you doing to me? You're trying to kill me. Get that thing out of here, and please don't ever come here again. What are you, crazy? What are you, crazy?
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
I know. If I ever lose this job and can't do radio anymore, I'm just going to stand in the street and do Jewish accents.
I'll be incredibly popular.
So, my highest rated shows ever, like a decade ago, was on the subject of colonoscopies. So, when I found out that I could book a show talking about excessive gas pains, basically, and that result in diarrhea, I thought, this is going to put me on the map. I'm going to be on the map again. I'll be able to write books about it. I'll get the Nobel Peace Prize for discussing IBS with the diarrhea results. So Dr. Donica Moore is going to join us later in the show. That is one of the longest introductions to an interview I have ever done and will ever do. Excuse me. I still have this cough. I got a cold like 3 weeks ago. I could feel it festering in my throat. And within about the next day, I started, my nose was running all over the place. And then it kind of went away after 3 days. And I thought, wow, this is the shortest duration of a cold I've ever had. That was 3 weeks ago. And I still have this runny nose. My body is producing phlegm at a rate of about 72 vats of phlegm per hour. If you ever need extra phlegm,
call me. Call me.
I've got a lot of it. Now, I don't save it or anything. I throw it away because I don't know of any practical application for vats and vats of phlegm. Should there ever be one, I could be rich. I know that people give blood. I know that people give sperm. The day that people can give phlegm, I shall be living in a mansion somewhere.
Ron, how did you unmask your fortune to be able to live in this comfort, in this palace, in this 740-acre piece of land, in this 2,000-bathroom palace that you own? How did you unmask your fortune?
Phlegm. It's phlegm. It's all phlegm. Don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. Don't ever, ever kid yourself, because the day will come. Oh, yeah, yeah. You'll say, Ron, I remember that Ron Van Dam. He used to do radio. What's he doing now? Phlegm. He's in phlegm. He's immersed in phlegm.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
And by the way, the word phlegm begins with a P. What, Ron? It can't begin with a P. It must begin with an F. I'm forming the F sound with my lips. Phlegm? It's an F, Ron. What are you talking about? No, it's a P. It's not phlegm. How can you say it's a P? It's a P. Look it up. That's why I get the big bucks. Why would the English language be like that? Why would you start the word phlegm with a P and get away with it? That's not right. Something's horribly wrong with that. I know. I don't know. I don't know who starts these word things. Is there a guy in Nevada who just sits in his bathroom all day and makes up words that spelled incorrectly? Let's see. Phlegm. I have plenty of it. Sounds like it begins with an F. Let's screw them up and begin it with a P. There you go. I think that's what happens. Speaking of Nevada, people actually live in the desert. Did you know that? Yeah, they do. People in Nevada actually live in the desert. Yeah, they do. They build homes in the desert, and they irrigate the desert to bring water out to it in little pipelines and things, and your neighbor is a cactus. I don't know why. I have a friend who lives in I know somebody who lives in Nevada, and he has a home out there. And oddly enough, he doesn't have phlegm, so maybe that's the key. He has a home out in Nevada. He says he loves it. He says he lives, it's the desert, and he says he loves it. Beautiful cactus out there. Some tremendously beautiful cactus. And he loves it out in Nevada. And sometimes he'll tell me how hot it is in Nevada. And he'll say, Ron, the temperature today out here outside my home is 110 degrees. My God, you must be melting. No, actually, it's quite comfortable. There's no humidity. Oh, I see. You didn't say that. Oh, 110 degrees with no humidity. That's acceptable. At what point is it too hot to even care about the humidity anymore? Is it like 220 degrees? Do you have to be on fire to admit that it's kind of a little bit hot in Nevada? What is a threshold? What do you call hot in Nevada? Bursting into flames? Is that hot enough for you? One of the most uncomfortable places to live for me in my life was Florida. For many reasons. Of course, devastating Hurricane Michael in the Florida Panhandle. Have you seen video from that? Holy crap, man. Wow. That is home, gone, obliterated, smithereens, traumatic, ultimately, and some loss of lives as well. Anyway, Florida, man, what's up with that place? It is so freaking humid in that state. It's humid all the time. If you have frizzy hair, don't ever go to Florida. You'll never have straight hair again, ever. People with straight hair can't keep their hair straight in Florida. And then you walk down the street and there's like alligators and serpents and phlegm all over the place. No, really, there's like geckos and geckos and what kind of place is that? And right in the center of it is the Florida Everglades. It's a swamp. It's a freaking swamp. Stop calling it the Everglades. It's a swamp. It's a swamp full of things that can eat you alive. And that's just the stuff that crawls on the ground. Mosquitoes. Holy crap, mosquitoes. The size of airplanes. It's terrible there. It's terrible. It's hot in the summer. It's hot and humid. It's 100 degrees hot and humid. Then you walk into a CVS, it's 10 degrees below zero in there. It's amazing people don't flash die, you know, like just going from the heat to the extreme freezing air conditioning cold. It's amazing people just don't frost up all of a sudden. And the cockroaches, they don't even know they're cockroaches. They think they're citizens. Cockroaches actually go into restaurants and order food. They don't scurry. They don't scurry when the light comes on. They just stand there and say, "What's your problem, eh? Put the light off, will you? Get out of here. Get out of my kitchen." Cockroaches have attitudes in Florida. Oh, no, not for me. Oh, no, 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 no. No, 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 no. There's a lot of seniors there. It's the last place they live. I wouldn't say they go to Florida, you know, waiting to die, but I will say that they're usually on the elder side of life, and they drive very slowly. Let me tell you something. If I were on the elder side of life, I try to get somewhere as fast as I can while I can still get there. Do you know what I mean? Why would I drive slow? I don't have that much time anymore. But that's what they do. If I were an elderly person in Florida, I'd be going like 90 miles an hour. What the hell? What the hell? Are you going to arrest me? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I don't have much time. I'm moving quickly. I don't understand Florida. I don't get it. I just don't, so I don't go there. Everybody goes to Disney World. It's amazing that that part of Florida doesn't just sink into the ocean because there's so many damn people in one area. The densely populated. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, let's speak to our guest right now, Dr. Donica Moore.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Dr. Donica Moore joins us. You've been with us before. I remember you.
I have.
Good to have you.
And I'm so flattered to be back.
Yes. Well, you know, the topic that we're talking about, I believe, is just so common that it's amazing, but yet nobody talks about it. They kind of keep it to themselves. So I think this is very important. And we're talking about IBS. And remind everybody what that is, if you would.
Yeah, in medicine, we make really complicated names for things, and then we have acronyms for everything. So IBS stands for Irritable Bowel Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a particular type of IBS, IBSD, which stands for Irritable Bowel Syndrome with Diarrhea. So that's why we say IBSD.
Okay.
And the characteristics of this diarrhea is that it's really unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And then other symptoms that people have with it include abdominal pain, cramping, gas, bloating, and then this sense of urgency that if I don't get to the bathroom like right away, we're going to have an accident.
Are you going to my personal information and finding out all about me because you just described me? Every once in a while.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I think you did.
I didn't know that, but 16 million people who are listening are also having the same reaction.
Yeah.
Because that's how common this is. Mm-hmm.
Is it
and
always...
people don't realize it.
Well, they realize it, but they just do it. They
don't realize it's a condition that's treatable.
Well,
yeah, they think this is just normal for them.
Yeah, but boy, is it uncomfortable when it's happening. It's like the end of the world, and then it goes away. I've never had children. I never gave childbirth, but I think it's like extremely painful, and then 10 minutes later, you don't remember you had it.
Yeah, trust me, childbirth takes a lot longer than 10 minutes. Right. That's a whole another topic.
All right, you win. Okay, never mind. Bad analogy. Okay,
but if it's that uncomfortable, I don't know if I should even ask you, have you seen your doctor yet? Because we know that...
Yeah, what?
You have? Because we know that fewer than 30% of people who have this have actually consulted a physician.
Yeah, no, I have not. I have not. And even when I go for the annual checkup, they say, how's everything? But see, if I'm not having it at the time, I completely forgot I had it. So that's why. If I had it every day, but I don't.
Yeah, it's time to mention it to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that the average person who goes to see a gastroenterologist has had the symptoms for about 4 years before they finally get their butts to a doctor.
True that.
And the good news is, the bad news is it's not curable.
Uh-huh.
The good news is that there are many treatment options available.
Okay.
The other bad news is there's many different conditions that cause these symptoms.
Uh-huh.
But that's why it's up to your doctor to evaluate you, to do the necessary physical exam, to do the necessary lab tests, and then to let you know what your diagnosis is, and then to come up with a treatment plan.
What is actually happening in my body when these incidents occur? Is this a buildup of gas? What's actually going on inside me when this is going on?
Okay, So we won't talk about you because, of course, I haven't examined you and
certainly
I'm not your doctor and
not.
All those disclaimers that my lawyer makes me say all the time.
You. I know.
But what we know that happens in many people who have irritable bowel syndrome, there are many different causes. So, of course, we always look at family history. We look at associations with food. We look at associations with anxiety or depression, which ironically used to be thought of as a cause. It's now being considered as an effect or as a chicken and egg phenomenon.
Okay.
We look at your history of taking various medications, whether that's antibiotics or antidepressants. But we also, the more we learn about this, the more we're learning about the interrelationship between the gut microbiome and the cause of irritable bowel syndrome with diarrhea. So the gut microbiome refers to trillions of bacteria and other microorganisms that normally live in the intestines. And somebody actually did the math and said that if we totaled all these microorganisms, they would weigh 5 pounds.
Wow.
The sum total of all of them.
Oh.
So it's really incredible. And the more we learn about the gut microbiome, the more we learn that it has an interrelationship with your immune system and with diseases and disorders of the intestines, as well as your whole body. So one study looked at 109 patients with irritable bowel syndrome and showed that 73% of them had an imbalance in their gut microbiome compared to only 16% of healthy people. So what does that mean? Well, all these trillions of microorganisms normally live in peace and harmony. However, if one group or one type gains superiority over another group and another type and upsets the balance of power for some reason, then bad reactions can occur. And what causes those imbalances in the microbiome? It could be stress. It could be illness. It could be antibiotics. There was another fascinating study that was a huge study that was done in active duty military personnel around the world, called the Millennium Cohort Study, and it was published in 2016. And what this study looked at was, among many other things, it looked at people who were in the military who had new-onset irritable bowel syndrome. Because if you think about it, even though irritable bowel syndrome with diarrhea can affect people at any age, the most common ages to get it would be between 20 and 40. So, of course, in the military, that's how old people are. Or a majority of the people are. So it looked at people who had new onset IBS, and what they found is a large, large percentage of them had a previous history of food poisoning or infectious gastroenteritis as sort of the start of all this. So they say, you know, the way that taking the history works is, you know, I was fine until I had food poisoning, you know, when I was 21, and I sort of never really was the same after that. And so, of course, food poisoning can really mess with your gut microbiome, but also we often treat it with antibiotics. And same with infectious gastroenteritis. So that's just really fascinating. I think the question is also, okay, this is really interesting, Danica, but now what do we do about it? I think the most important thing is, as I said, to make that call and make an appointment with your healthcare provider.
I suppose.
I'm not expecting anybody to be listening to this saying, okay, she talked about these five symptoms and I have four of them, so maybe I have this condition. That's up to your doctor to figure that out with you in partnership. Your job is to make the appointment and actually go to the appointment and actually go. Then once your doctor makes a diagnosis, there's a whole range of treatment options that start with talking about eliminating certain foods, possibly, or increasing exercise, which of course benefits everything. But mostly increasing exercise with respect to IBS-D is very effective as at reducing stress. And then they'll talk about prescription treatments. And again, the good news is there's a wide range. And many doctors will start by prescribing fiber or antispasmodic therapies. The good news about that is that works for about a third of patients. The bad news is that means that about 70% of patients fail to respond to those traditional recommendations. So a lot of patients then give up on therapy at that point, and they say, well, the doctor gave me a prescription and it didn't work. But then you have to go back And this is not just if you have IBS-D. If you have any condition.
Sure.
If you have strep throat and you get treated and the treatment doesn't work, you have to go back or at least call them and say, okay, this isn't working, you know, should I come back? And the good news is there are newer therapies that are specifically targeted to the mechanism of the imbalance in the gut microbiome. So that is very exciting for people.
Interesting. I guess it's also a matter of frequency. Like if someone says, yeah, I get this at least once a week or every other day, that's something you got to do. If someone says, I get this like maybe once every couple of months or something, is that like fairly normal? I mean, is frequency an important factor?
Well, frequency is an important factor and in different ways, and particularly two different types of frequency. So one is the frequency you're talking about, which is how often do you get an episode or a flare-up of IBS-D. The other issue about frequency, most people don't realize that diarrhea does not just refer to the consistency of the stool, but it also refers to how many times you're actually going per day. So, you know, most people who have this are used to going like 4, 5, 6 times a day.
That's a lot.
And that's not normal.
No.
But if it's not like liquidy or like really super, you know, super unformed, they don't think of that as diarrhea.
Correct.
But that's what the definition of diarrhea includes.
Okay.
And the problem is because it's chronic and because they often start getting it in their 20s when we're pretty resilient, people just adopt this as their new normal. I think it also depends on what your job is. So if you're a radio host and this flares up in the middle of an interview, that could be pretty problematic.
It could be.
Although if I'm your guest, I could just keep talking and you could run to the bathroom and come back and nobody would know.
Well, that'd be called verbal diarrhea.
But if you're...
Yeah,
that's what I have. I have been accused of that. Right. I admit that.
For which there is no cure.
And there's definitely no treatment. But, you know, other jobs... You know, if you're a third grade teacher, you can't just run out and leave your class unattended.
Ouch.
Or if you're a surgeon, or if you're an airplane pilot, or if you're, you know, just about, you know, and if you're somebody who drives a lot. I heard this statistic a couple of weeks ago that up to 25% of the American workforce has jobs that require driving in, as some part of their job.
Yeah, that can be bad.
Driving some kind of vehicle.
Yeah.
So if you have a driving job, you can't, you're on the New Jersey Turnpike, you just can't get up and run and find a restroom pretty easily.
Yeah, being on a New Jersey Turnpike in itself is not a good thing. Anyway, this is, you know, never have I had as long a conversation with somebody about diarrhea, and it's been very, it's been good. I mean, I've learned a lot of stuff here. How can we get more information about this?
Well, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, hopefully you will have another long conversation with somebody about diarrhea. And
I understand.
Your doctor,
ouch.
Who, of course,
okay.
is the most important person for personal medical information. But in addition, once you make the appointment, we have a website, IBSDUpClose.com, where people can get a lot more background information about the topic, about the condition, about treatment options, about other people who have it, and most importantly, about specific questions you should ask your doctor.
Perfect. Always a pleasure speaking to you.
Likewise, and good luck. Please get this taken care of.
Well, it's not that bad. You know, it's been a tough, but like you said, Ron, don't say it's not that bad. Just discuss it with your doctor. I get it now.
Right.
Thank you so much. You take care.
Take care, Ron. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you go. There you go. All right. I am. I've got to get out of here. I've got things to do. This isn't, you know, my entire life. I do have other things, so I must move on. And I'm sure you got stuff to do too. I don't know when's the last time you vacuumed the rug, but it's starting to look a little shabby. So let's get on that, huh? I'll be with you next time around. Until then, I wish you peace.